This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. The following is a conversation we recorded on Wednesday, May 24th, and was actually an extension of our daily podcast, but we felt it was so good as a standalone piece that we wanted to separate it out and put it on its own podcast episode for release on Monday, May 29th. So that's why you're seeing it here and why it was recorded a bit earlier. It's not very time sensitive, and it's a great look at, as the podcast episode description says, a deep dive into commodities and gaining exposure, whether it's in the futures market or in the equity market. And just an additional note, we recorded this deep dive podcast as an extension of a daily podcast. So the slide deck is a little bit odd in that the first several slides were for that daily Wednesday podcast. But that's taken care of by a reference to the slide numbers, which are all correct in the podcast anyway. So without any further ado, I'll turn it over to the recording we made on Wednesday. We are going to do a deep dive into commodities. And I think I'm just going to let you two take away the microphone here, Ole, on commodities, and Peter as well, as you've combined to take a look at different ways to achieve exposure to commodities, besides just trading, of course, in the commodities themselves.
Yeah, thanks, John. If we just, very quickly, on slide 12, what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about commodities, especially also the current commodity market, how is it's structured, and how do you get exposure to commodities? What are backwardation, contango? That's something about, supply and demand, of course. We're going to talk about a little bit about electrification, which are hugely important for the demand outlook for lithium and copper and pricing of that. We're going to talk about whether commodities have any place or relevance for an asset allocation portfolio, and then Ole will provide with his longer-term commodity outlook. So if we just go straight into it, then there's a long history of commodity trading. It obviously all started with physical trading. But the modern version of the commodity market, the one we know today, started more than 150 years ago in Chicago with the Chicago Board of Trade, so in 1848. And that really kickstarted what we know today with futures trading. And I think it's you've been living some of your life in these commodity pits where you're trading these futures products.
Yeah, I worked in that environment back in my days in London when it was called the London International Financial Futures Exchange, and it was a crazy, crazy time and a crazy market, and it's just phenomenal how things can get done on a floor with that, with a lot of screaming and shouting and women and men. But the commodity market and the futures trading in the set really just started simply because there was a mismatch between in revenues. You had a farmer who needed the money in the spring to buy his seeds, and you had the miller who was looking to buy the end product in the autumn and produce bread and so on. And these guys basically they had different timing, and the futures market basically allowed them both to meet at an exchange where they could settle the price for a future delivery. And that's really where the foundation of all commodity trading today. In lots of other markets, foreign exchange, stock markets, and so on, you have lots of different venues and routes where you can trade these markets. But ultimately, when you look at commodities, it all boils down to what happens in the futures market. That's where you have the liquidity. That's where you have the tightness of the spreads and so on, and that's really what's most of other products are priced on the back of, especially obviously the ETFs, which has gained a lot of popularity in recent years. There are three major categories which we need to understand, which is makes perfect sense. We got the energy sector, we got metals, and we got agriculture. We're quite often looking at these markets from an index perspective, simply just to get a feel for the whole commodity sector as a whole. But obviously, you can also dwell into individual sectors. But looking at the index perspective, we like to use the Bloomberg Commodity Index. On slide 14 there, we got the target weights for this year, 2023. And if we boil them down, we can basically see that they are targeting roughly one-third exposure in the three different sectors. Some of these commodities that we see on the slide is not involved in the index, and that's primarily due to lack of liquidity or lack of underlying futures markets. That basically means something like cobalt, lithium, uranium, some of these quite quite hot commodities right now. They are not in that index. So it's obviously not giving the whole picture, but just taking a look at the energy and some of the key industrial metals and big in agricultural, they obviously cover for the bulk of the global commodity market.
Yeah, and it's important to note as well, Ole, that a lot of the commodities you have highlighted here, so there's a lot of physical trading with many different other types of commodities than what you see here. These are a highlight of the more liquid markets that with an active futures markets. And what is important to understand, we'll talk more about that later when we go into the equity market and what you can get in terms of commodity exposure. A lot of these commodities here are raw commodities in the sense. Some of them, maybe jet fuel is a product that has been refined from crude oil. But I think that is essentially what the Bloomberg Commodity Index is, the raw commodities, because when you go into the equity market, you find a lot of chemicals and other higher value added commodities. I think there is a layered approach to the commodities. Mm. There are the raw commodities, and then there's the higher value added commodities that are products of those raw commodities. I think that's an important distinction to make. And if you look at slide 15, not that you need to have, not that you must track the slide deck, but there are different ways of trading the commodities market. Obviously, you can trade in physical commodities, and that's of course very niche markets. And there are a couple of stocks or companies, if you will, that engage in these physical commodity markets with a pure exposure. So Warren Buffett, that we have talked a lot about, he and his investment company Berkshire Hathaway have gained access or invested in five physical commodity trading firms in Japan that are trading around the globe, around the clock in a lot of different things, not only raw materials, but also higher value added commodities. And then, Ole, as you mentioned, we have the commodity futures. We have options on futures. We have CFDs on futures. We have stocks in various different commodity companies. We'll get back to that. And then some of the latest developments, and you really like this space, Ole, because you also put them into into our slide deck now and then in the podcast. And these are these ETFs and ETCs, which are exchange traded commodities, which basically tracks a basket of different futures or notes, if you will, and where you can see some different flows.
Exactly, and the simple reason for adding the ETFs is just from the widening popularity from investors to dwell into or get involved in commodities, because you have to realize the risks that are involved. Futures markets are really geared towards the big bulk traders, so the contract sizes are very, very large. We're just showing an example of that in the gold there on the right hand side. Just one contract of gold is the equivalent of 100 ounces, and that's probably more than most want to deal in that kind of clip size. By trading CFDs, which are quite often tracking, most of the time they track the futures price, you basically have the ability to break down the size that you trade. But generally for both of these are leverage products, so you do not have to put up $100 to invest $100. You are putting up a percentage. And in the big futures markets, that percentage these days are normally less than 10%. So you're having quite a lot of gearing, and then you have to be aware of that additional risk from leverage trading. That is not what you in the ETFs and the general box standard ETFs. They are basically just like stocks. So $100 in is $100 exposure, and that basically means it fits better, perhaps better into a portfolio of other asset classes at the same time.
All right, and then we need to talk a little bit about this concept of backwardation and contango. And for people that are familiar with commodities, it's not a new phenomenon, Ole. But we've tried to show it here on slide 16. So, you have the futures are a forward contract. So they are prices that you can that based into the with expiry into the future, right? So you can have a forward curve on a specific commodity that can be upward sloping or downward sloping. And as you've shown here, a downward sloping is backwardation and upward sloping is contango. And this is a very fundamental and crucial point to understand in commodity trading.
Absolutely, because what we have to remember is if you are buying and selling a futures contract or an ETF which tracks the futures contract, there is a role involved because these futures contracts, they tend to expire on a regular basis. So whenever one expires, you have to roll into the next contract in order to maintain your exposure. And if you have a market which is in backwardation, which is the bulk of the commodities we have right now, basically a signal of a relatively tight supply, that basically means every month you're rolling out of your expiring contract, you're selling high and buy the next one at a lower level. That gives you a roll yield, which is basically adding to your return that you have. The same thing, the opposite goes when the market is oversupplied, when we're in contango. Looking on the right-hand side there on slide 16, this is basically the Bloomberg Commodity Index, the weighted average of all the components in the or the futures markets in that commodity index. And as you can see, from a five-year period up until 2020, we basically had most commodities trading in contango. It was a horrible time for investors because simply you were losing money on a monthly basis just by having a passive long position. That changed dramatically in 2020 as the world started to recover from the pandemic and lockdowns. And then most recently, we had the war in Ukraine. We also had the expectations for a strong surge in demand when China reopened. And that drove quite an extensive backwardation in the market, which gave you quite a decent roll yield. And just as an example, just what this means, looking at the return on the... This is basically showing the Bloomberg Commodity Spot Index. So that's basically just what the spot price has been doing. That's the black line on the left-hand side. And then the orange line, which is the total return, where you take the roll into account. And looking at a five-year period from 17 up to the end of 2021, you were basically looking at a spot price that told you that you would have made somewhere in the 50s. I can't see it completely here. I think it's 52%. But actually looking at if you had an ETF tracking that index during that time, you would only have made a little bit more than 21%. And that's because that negative roll yield eroded your return on a monthly basis. Fast forward to last year, up until now, even though the last few months has not been great, you can see the difference there has suddenly swapped around. So so instead of the spot index is indicating the market is down on during this period. But actually, if you held a position in an ETF or through the an ETF on this basket, you will still be in the money. So it just tells you the strength of the market in contango backwardation. So not only is it good from investment perspective, if the market is in backwardation also generally tells a story about the market that is in tight supply. And that kind of right now goes a little bit against the weakness we see in the commodities because most of them are still trading in backwardation.
This is also an important phenomenon if you invest in the futures. But if you look at commodity related companies or stocks, you can still make a positive drift or a positive return in these companies despite the forward curve shape. So that's an important thing to have in mind. There, a lot of these commodity trading firms or commodity related companies, whether it's mining, they can still grow their revenue and cash flows even though you have a contango in the market because quantities sold of iron ore, etc., can still go up as the economy grows. So that's an important thing to understand. But we'll get back to that point later. The next slide, Ole. This is those that are the regular listeners of our podcast will have seen this before. It's your overview of different types of ETFs across both in the US and Europe on the commodity market overall. And I think this is a further invention that has broadened the potential exposure and the easy access for ordinary investors into commodities.
Indeed, and this is just to finish off the futures / ETF ETC section before we move on to the stocks to watch in this asset class. But yes, this is just I would say a fraction of all the different ETFs that relate to commodity investments. They're basically based on AUM, so these are some of the biggest out there. Just giving you an idea about some of the more popular ones. Again, it's split into two different sections. We've got UCITS, which are eligible, which can be traded by investors, private investors in Europe, and non-UCITS, which are generally available, but not to investors not to private individuals. So, but this is just giving you an idea about some some different categories. And just to be aware, the if you look at the indices, just always just Google what the actual underlying investment is. You can see quite a few of these does track the Bloomberg Commodities Index, so we know that it's roughly 1/3 in the different sectors. But if it's other indices, just Google them, and just to make sure you have a good feeling for what the exposure, where the exposure is coming from.
And as you've always warned about before, some of these on the especially the leverage side are dealing in derivatives with really short term exposures that just really don't show anything resembling the longer term performance of the underlying product. It's more of a day to day trading instrument rather than something that should be even considered for investors.
Exactly, and that's especially when you start to get into leveraged ETFs where you have a 2x or 3x exposure to a specific commodity. I mean, the one that we always warn about is the natural gas 2x. That's a ProShares. It's highlighted in red at the bottom part. You can see it's down 97% year, over the last year. It's down more than 80% year to date. That is the ultimate contango investment killer, where you have a market which is in a deep contango, where there's a negative roll every single month until you get into the winter period where it switches around. But combine that with a gas price that has dropped from $10 almost down to $2, and then you have a recipe for disaster. So this is really one where if you bought a composition just a month ago, the chance of almost getting your money back is close to impossible. So these should really only be used for very, very short term, I would say, almost say intraday trading.
All right. If we move to the commodities and the equity market, it's a little bit different beast because we're talking about companies that are engaged in the various different commodity markets. But as I said earlier, a lot of the futures markets on commodities are futures on the raw commodities, where a lot of the companies that we have in the commodity space in the equity market are vertically integrated. So they span, they could be, drilling companies in the oil and gas industry, which is very raw. But then you can also have these oil and gas majors, I'll get back to that, where they have refinery products and chemicals, what have you. So this is very important. And I've also highlighted the point I made just a couple of minutes ago, that regardless of the shape of the forward curve, a lot of these commodity companies can generate a return on their investor capital, pay out dividends, etc., and give you as an investor a return. So, and if we start to look at the equity market, it's defined, from a classification point of view, as something called the GICS, the Global Industry Classification System, by the MSCI Incorporated company, basically, which is one of the biggest benchmark providers in the world. And the two main specific commodity GIC sectors are the ones called energy and materials. And energy basically comprises of the different various types of oil related companies, whether they're in drilling, exploration, whether they're oil and gas majors, whether they're only refinery, whether it's marketing or storage or transportation, etc. In the materials, it's basically split between chemicals and mining and metals. And in metals, in this case, is steel. So steel, again, is a higher value added product. It is a commodity, but it's not a raw commodity in the sense. And I'm also, where are the agricultural here? So a lot of the companies that are producing the raw agricultural products like wheat, etc., they're not publicly listed. And if they are, they have very small market values. There are, of course, some companies that have invested in farmlands, etc., but it's not the big beast in the equity market. Typically, the exposure to the agricultural sector goes via, and I'll show that in a few minutes, goes here on the next slide. So slide 20, you can see here that the four largest agricultural companies in the largest agricultural ETF are Deere, which is basically an equipment maker for farmers. So that, it's an indirect exposure you get to the agriculture sector and higher commodity prices on wheat and soybeans, rice, etc. Those rising agricultural prices benefit the share price and profits and the demand for the farming equipment. And then you have two companies there, Corteva and Nutrien, which are two crops and seed, and they also sell different various types of pesticides and fertilizers to farmers. So again, when you have rising agricultural prices, the share price of these companies tends to go up as well, because they have now buyers with a more fat purse, so they can set up their hike their prices. Archer Daniels Midland is a vertical integrated I think All Singing, All Dancing company within the agriculture space. They have a lot of different divisions, but they also store grain, etc. It's a middleman, it's a trading house as well. They do a lot of things. So these are the four major ones in the agricultural agriculture sector to watch there. If we go forward to the energy stocks, this is where it gets tricky. And this is also why, if you want the pure commodity exposure, you should definitely look at the commodity futures or CFD contracts, as Ole mentioned. Because what you get in the equity market is you're getting a lot of the companies with, you know, higher value added refined products. So the energy stocks mostly are oil and gas majors. They have, you know, chemical refinery. They also do the drilling. Some of them do exploration, etc., etc. So that's just something to be aware of. But keep in mind, there is a very high correlation between rising crude oil and jet fuel prices, etc., into these stocks as well. Also high gas prices. That's what we have seen. The energy stocks have really been the key momentum driver in equity markets during the rise of energy prices, especially in 2021 and 2022. If we look at the mining industry, this is also an industry where it's very difficult to get the very precise exposure. So if you look at the largest miners in the world, it's mostly exposure to iron ore, so that's BHP Group and Rio Tinto. There's also a lot of exposure to aluminium, copper, and gold. And all the big miners, they all diversified. Yes, they have tilt towards one type of metal in their mining operation, but they all diversified. And typically, if you're a gold producer, you're also a copper producer. It's very difficult to find these very, very, very pure exposures. So if you feel that there is a specific case to be long copper, it might not be the right approach to buy some of these big mining companies. You should be potentially looking for the commodity futures, or you can find some miners that have, you know, a more pure exposure. I'll show some examples of that very shortly. Because the commodity market is so different, and some of it are raw materials, higher value added. We also have, you know, fish farming, forestry as sort of, you know, tier two commodity related markets. So I have actually here on slide 23, we did a lot of work on our commodities basket, and we wanted to, you know, give an inspiration inside this basket to other types of commodities markets, as I said, including forestry, also coal, which is not a market that is traded in the Europe and the US futures markets. It's mostly a Chinese futures market that is related to coal. So we put in here a lot of different companies with different category exposures. It's one of our most popular theme baskets that we have ever created. The performance has also been quite good relative to the broader market. So if you want to get a good filter and starting list for this, then this is definitely a good way to start your journey into commodity trading. And Ole, we're coming back to the current state of the commodity market with backwardation and contango. So can you please take us through what you have put in here on slide 24?
Yeah, just to once again, just highlighting how many of the different commodities that are currently in trading in backwardation. And I'm just highlighting this because we've seen quite a lot of weakness in commodities now for the past few months. We are trading at least a 1 year low right now. If you look at the Bloomberg Commodities Index, and you would expect weakness like that to be associated with markets that simply be starting to be oversupplied. So there's no demand. So spot prices are cheap relatively to the forward prices. That's not the case, and that's still part of the stories why we maintain a longer term bullish outlook for commodities, because even though the demand outlook right now is somewhat challenged, the supply outlook is equally also important to watch in the years ahead. And just consider everything equal, all these markets should really be trading in contango. Because this is the 1 year roll spread. So this is basically the spread between the spot price and 1 year out. And just imagine this. If you say, for instance, gold, you're buying gold either 1 year out, or you're buying gold today. You borrow the dollars to buy the gold and you put them in storage. Leave the storage cost aside, but the fact that the funding cost of for 1 year is basically the US 1 year note yield, and that's around 5%. So in theory, gold should be trading 5% cheaper in a year's time. more expensive in a year's time, because the alternative would be that you either buy it in a year's time or you buy it now. But if you buy it a year out, you don't have the funding cost in the meantime. But that obviously has to be reflected in the price. So if the price is 5% higher in a year's time, that is a contango of 5%. And that basically means all these commodities, really just based on the funding cost for 1 year, should be trading at a 5% contango. And that basically makes those trading in backwardation even more relevant from the tightness perspective.
And good points there, Ole. And talking about the tightness, one of the things that have reduced demand, Ole, is the fact that we have this inflation in Europe and the US. So the high inflation is also reducing the quantity produced, because we have to pay a lot more for the same, we have to pay a lot more for the things. So, and given that we're not getting as much money in terms of wage increases, we are reducing the quantities that we are consuming as a society. And you see that reflected in China right now, and also consumer companies in Europe. On the supply side, I like to show this. It's on slide 25. It shows you the capital expenditures in the global materials and energy sector. So that's chemical companies, it's mining companies, and it's all the different shapes of energy related stocks. And you can see here that if you back out inflation, we have a real capital expenditures level that is on par with where we were 20 years ago. So, and if you think about what is ahead of us with the green transformation and all the huge investments going forward in infrastructure and commodity-related sectors, because we have the fragmentation game, which we wrote about in our Q2 outlook, which is basically a reconfiguration of global supply chains. To me, there's just a big disconnect here. And I personally, I'm invested in a copper miner, and at the current copper prices, this is a company that is only generating a 7% return on their invested capital. So, as a shareholder in a copper miner, I would expect the copper prices to be much higher, because a 7% return on invested capital is not enough to drive a lot more investments. Ole, on slide 26 here, you've put in a lot of different metals. I hope you don't go through them all, but just maybe highlight a few of them.
I could do, and I don't even actually want to highlight anyone. I just want to show the sheer amount of different metals that goes into the green transformation, whether it's batteries, electric traction, solar, wind turbines, storage, which I haven't even put in here, and transportation. So this is simply, the green transformation is heavily dependent, as we write here, on the supply of these key metals. And if that supply is being brought, is challenged, then obviously we do have an issue. And we already seen now, we just had to these major mining companies reporting, they're all talking about the same issues that they're facing, the lower ore grade, rising environmental the challenges, government intervention, higher labor cost, and so on. And that basically means that all in all, their cost prices are going up, basically meaning that if they need to produce the metals that we need, then the price of these metals needs to go up as well in order to ensure profitability.
Yeah, now that we're talking about the green transformation, a very key component of that is the electrification. And we talked about lithium and copper. We have done our best to find the best way to get the most pure exposure to lithium and copper. So finding miners in both segments that are not as diversified, so you're getting a more pure exposure. And as you said, there are a lot of environmental considerations being talked about, both in terms of cobalt mining, but also lithium. These lithium brine pools that you have in South America, these are very toxic. Copper is extremely water intensive, so that is competing for a very key resource for human life. It's not going to be easy at all. And John, you're following the electric vehicle industry a lot, and there's a lot of research going into, can we somehow create batteries that are using less lithium, or can we get rid of lithium altogether? And also the same goes with the copper. The notion is that there is not enough copper for doing this electrification that we want to do. So we have to come up with maybe an alternative that can be applied in some certain application. And aluminium has been put forward, but it's very fragile and doesn't have the same conductivity. So you have to mix it with something else. So this is an ongoing debate.
One brief thing to flag, and a hopeful thing to flag, because I think we would agree that an electric future would be better than a fossil fuel future that continues to threaten climate change, if we can somehow get there without disruption that's too extensive. There was a story flagged to me that the new Tesla Cybertruck will use a 48-volt technology, which means that the copper windings in the actual electric motor, which is actually the most copper-intensive part of an EV, it could reduce the amount of copper used by 75%. So you're starting to get things back to on par with a normal ICE vehicle. So we have to include the ability to innovate here. And there are even battery technologies that are actively being rolled out by China's biggest battery maker, CATL, that don't even use lithium. They use a sodium ion-based technology. Less energy intensive, but does that have a future? So we also need to keep, of course, a track of the shifting sands of the technology itself and the intensity of the use of these different metals.
Yeah, and for those that are not browsing through the slide deck, just to mention the two largest lithium miners we have in our... or maybe three, Albemarle in terms of market cap. We have SQM from Chile, but half of that business is also potassium and potash and fertilizer business. And then you have Ganfeng Lithium Group, which is a Chinese-based company, but Albemarle is the big one out of the US. And then on the cover, some of the more pure exposure, the top three companies in terms of pure exposure, Antofagasta, First Quantum Minerals, and then Southern Copper. Those are the three best ways to get pure copper exposure. And then we talked about the portfolio. Does it make any sense to have commodities? Do they play a role in portfolios? And this is I've put in here on slide 28 an excellent piece of analysis from AQR, the very famous quant hedge fund out of New York, and they have shown with pretty precisely that commodities do have a positive sensitivity both to inflation but also inflation surprises, and it's actually the best one together with emerging market currencies and US 10-year break even. So it is from a long-term strategic allocation, if you want to neutralize some of that sensitivity from an inflation surprise, which we are going through right now, but also a permanently higher level of inflation, you want to have exposure to the physical world, so commodities and gold, and in this case they're also highlighting the emerging market currencies. And then we have to end this deep dive with a commodities outlook, so 2023 and beyond, you're calling it, we'll hear on slide 29.
Yeah, exactly, and it's happening at an interesting time that we're talking about this, because as I mentioned, commodities has been under pressure for a while. We are worried about recession in the US and Europe. We are worried about, are we seeing a less commodity intensive recovery in China, all adding some strains on the market. But then we're also seeing basically, I think Goldman Sachs has put out in a report recently, we're seeing destocking both in the physical market and in the financial paper market. And the destocking is really due to the extreme surge we've seen in interest rates. The funding cost of holding material has gone up. The risk of demand going forward basically means the stocks right now are being run down instead of, and that's reducing the demand on producers, and that's where we're seeing some signs of weakness. But it basically coming at a time where stocks are being run down at the same time. At the same time, financial destocking is also unfolding. We're seeing hedge funds exiting the commodity sector at quite a rapid pace. So all in all, just setting up the stage for a recovery sooner or later. And we think that the recovery is likely going to be supply-driven or lack of supply-driven. And we're just highlighting some of the key drivers there. The green transformation we talked about, structural inflation not going down to 2.5% as the central banks are wishing for, but perhaps higher. And that attracts some hedging and some need for diversification, the weaker dollar, and then the tight supply of commodities, as we talked about. The investment appetite is not as high as it has been. It's been driven by ESG consideration and investor and lending restrictions. So all in all, putting commodities into an equity ratio perspective, you can see obviously we are potentially at a turn of a new cycle. So that's most certainly our outlook still. Is it going to be 23? Probably not. Looks like this year has going to be a consolidation year. So we're looking towards 24 and beyond.
All right, that is a wrap. Great information from you, Ole, and you, Peter, on the commodity market and different ways to get exposure, especially into equity. So that's a wrap for today, and we will resume tomorrow with our daily Saxo Market Call podcast.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.